Clean contact.
I'd hit it again because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Here it comes. Oh my goodness.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of the Golf Practice Podcast. My name is Andy Hayes, and with me is Ty Libby and Peter Donahue. Ty is going to be my co-host on this endeavor going forward. Ty, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Ty Libby, Manager of Administration, the Golf Practice.
And Ty, how long have you been playing golf for?
Since I was a boy, probably 5 years old. My dad threw some balls down on the green and let me hit some putts. He tells some stories about that. So off and on since I was five.
And Peter, you're the founder of the Golf Practice.
That's right.
Oh, it's only fitting that you would be here for the first episode of this podcast. Can you tell us a little bit how you came to first the game of golf and then how you came to found the Golf Practice?
Sure. How I first came to golf was through my father, who was an avid golfer, and going out with him as a toddler and his brothers when we would visit Cape Cod, where our family comes from. And when one of our moves in the town I grew up in, we moved out into the country, and so out in the country, I didn't have any friends that were living around like I did in town. So it kind of drove me to basketball and to golf because there was a golf course that was just down the street, about a quarter of a mile. And when I was 10, I started to play on that course. And then as I grew up playing football, basketball, baseball, tennis, bowling, all kinds of sports, by the time I got into college, golf became something that I was more focused on. After college, when I was deciding on a career, I decided what I wanted to do was teach. And I thought golf would be an interesting thing to study and teach, and so that took me towards the PGA, and once I got into the PGA, I realized that running a golf club operation wasn't where my interests lie, that it was really through teaching and working with other people. And so in 1989, when I was the head golf professional at Winnetka Golf Course, we decided to make a business out of teaching, and so we launched a company called Green to Tee Golf Academy, and that became the Golf Practice in 2011.
And so on the name, the Golf Practice has a special meaning. In our lobby, there's a poster that says the meaning of our name, and it describes where the name came from. You came up with the name yourself, right?
Right.
And the golf is from the Royal and Ancient Golf Club. Right?
That's exactly right. 1754, that's how they begin. And being admired of the ancient and healthful exercise of the golf.
Of the golf, yes. And the practice comes from another quote from Golf in the Kingdom called, I can read it. It says, "The golf is a place to practice fascination. 'Tis slow enough to concentrate the mind and complex enough to require our many parts. In that, 'tis a microcosm of the world's larger discipline." And I have read that a lot, and it's just starting to sink in on me how profound and amazing and deep that statement can be. The idea that golf is a place to practice fascination is something I never really thought of before. Can you say a little more about why you chose that or what you think it means to practice fascination?
Well, I think that you know, as I came into the game of golf, there were things that that I wanted out of golf. I admired athletes, and I dreamt of being a successful, maybe even a pro athlete. And so you would say that those rewards that I was first looking for in golf were really extrinsic or outside goals. But through the hours of spending time with myself, practicing and playing on the golf course and with other people, it was clear that doing it for its own sake required that you be interested in it. And I remember the first time I ever became really interested in learning something about golf was because I was slicing the balls out of bounds into the field off of this tee that was sitting up on the hill. And I, before I left the tee, I sat down and started to reflect on why this was happening, and notice that there was a lump or a kind of an uneven place in my wrist at the top of the backswing, and so that started me down a road of trying to discover how to change myself and be better, and that kind of interest and fascination is where it took off, and over the years it's come to mean all kinds of things, because golf invites you to explore different kinds of disciplines, from how the golf club works and how you might swing it to how you manage your emotions and decisions and thinking on the golf course. So fascination with any one or all of those things is really, I think, what I take out of that.
How old were you when you first noticed this lump in the top of your wrist?
I was 11.
You were 11?
Yeah, and it was like, I know, in my mind, I thought, it felt like a bent axle on my red wagon, how that would actually roll down the street, because I was making a kind of a cupping motion with my wrists at the top of the backswing, and so I had to try to figure out a strategy to correct that. And so I came up with my first principle in learning for myself, which was start from the finish. Or if you know where you want to end up, work your way backwards from there.
I think most 11-year-olds, when they slice a bucket of balls into the woods, they just give up and go play soccer or something.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, Ty. Did you have any? Have you found fascination with the game of golf, or
more recently, particularly? It was frustrating for me growing up, being a basketball player, a baseball player. I couldn't figure out why I couldn't hit this little white ball consistently. And so, my dad was a golfer, but I was always frustrated with the game. Had moments where I hit the ball well and really loved it, and that's what kept me coming back, is hitting one good shot around or one good shot every nine holes. And it's only been recently that I've been able to really appreciate what an effort it takes to be a good, consistent golf player. So,
yeah, I think fascination is such an interesting word for it, and something I mean, even like 6 months ago, if you had asked me like what's the point of golf, I'd be like, it's to break 80 or break 75 or break par. You know, it's like, it's about a number and it's about a score, and yeah, it's nice to hit good shots, but like the good shots are just in service of, you know, the score at the end of the day. But the more you think about that golf is a place to practice fascination, it's makes the game so much bigger and, I don't know, more profound.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I think it gives you, it used to, when I started playing, I was just as you were describing. If there was only one reason to go out and play golf, in my, let's say around the time I was 12, and that was to shoot the lowest score ever. And if I went out and started poorly, there wasn't any reason to continue playing. And I would very often turn around, walk in, and start over again. It was when I discovered one day on the golf course when I was having a terrible day, and I had sort of drawn the line in the sand about seven times, like, okay, let's start again. I'll par in from here, and it wasn't happening. Nothing was working. And finally, around the middle of the back nine, I realized I couldn't think of any reason to keep on playing. And it was only then that I realized that my opportunity was to use this adversity to strengthen my resolve to always approach every shot with a full focus and full intention and my full routine rather than just give up and start slopping around. So once I discovered how to make something out of the worst day of golf that I was having, that turned a corner for me. And then I opened the door for myself to see this as a fascination.
Yeah, I wonder how many people can actually ever figure out how to make something out of their worst day of golf.
Well, I think that was just a valuable lesson for me. And, you know, I think being open and available to the lessons that your experiences might have for you, it starts with a simple opening up that things are possible. And what I mean by that is someone once said to me, you know, when you're having a breakdown, breakthrough is just on the other side of that. And just the way that opens up the possibility that instead of when you're at the height of frustration or discouragement, to know that there may be an answer waiting for you just around the corner has actually proven itself to me very many times in my life and has changed the way I experience golf and life.
Yeah. Ty, do you lean more towards frustration or fascination?
Fascination these days. It used to be frustration, like I said, but definitely more towards fascination. Find the golf course a place where I can think more clearly, meditative almost, enjoy nature, have some physical exercise, and look around and appreciate, you know, what's available as far as the hard work that's gone in to make the golf course beautiful and appealing to the eye and that sort of thing. So definitely fascination.
So for you, it's like less about how you actually play.
Yes. You know, I still want to play as well as I can. I mean, I'm about a 15 handicap, so that's not usually in the cards. But I do try to enjoy it. I try to enjoy the good shots I hit, not dwell on the bad shots, and enjoy my time out there. Look, I don't have to be out there. We're fortunate enough to get to play some good courses for free, and so it's not like I'm paying my money to be out there. I'm out there because I want to be out there, and therefore I'm going to do my best to enjoy it.
Yeah, that. I mean, just like looking at the trees can be a practice of fascination. In my other life, I'm assistant golf coach at North Park University in Chicago, and we were playing one of our first practice rounds with the team. And, you know, we have six freshmen come in and they're all nervous, so they're playing bad. And one of the freshmen after a hole, he was just like, he hit his drive on the next hole and he's angry. He's like, I double chipped. I three putted. He's like, I'm so pissed. If only I didn't do this and that's this. And he was like so angry. And I just look at him and I say, why don't you just look at the leaves or the trees or the clouds? It's nice out here. And then I walked away and then he goes and he hits his next shot from like 240 yards on a par five and he sticks it to 3 feet and I half jokingly look back. I'm like, Alex, did you look at nature? And he goes, oh, I observed and enjoyed. That was such a great moment. Like, if you get that somehow observing and enjoying the nature, or somehow like not getting so angry at yourself, actually leads to playing better.
Well, I think that and I use that too. I can recall around one of the most satisfying tournament rounds that I played was a couple of years ago now, but I was having a terrible time, and I really at some times in the round just absolutely couldn't figure out how I could make a swing that would even hit the ball powerfully. I felt completely like my arms were not attached to my legs, and I spent a lot of the day looking up into the treetops, imagining what it would be to either be that branch being blown in the wind or to be a squirrel or some other small animal up there, and just being able to get out of my own head and into my imagination is a tool that I use to help change my perspective, because that's a real must as a golfer. You know, you're always blown around by the various narratives that go on in your head, you know, about yourself in, as a golfer or as an athlete or whatever. And sometimes they're not good thoughts. And your ability to recognize bad thinking, or thinking that is not powerful thinking, and to be able to find some way to change your perspective. I mean, that's as big a skill to me as knowing how to hook or slice the ball.
Yeah. I think your perspective is so important, and it makes me think of this. I remember this summer when we were preparing for one of our like junior clinics, and Pete, you and I were talking, and you were like, Kellen's going to be here, and Kellen is going to want to putt, because Kellen likes watching the ball roll along the ground. And that's such a basic thing, but before that, I had never even considered that putting, that you could enjoy watching the ball roll on the ground. You know what I mean? Like, putting's about getting the ball in the hole. It's not about watching the ball roll. But then, ever since then, I've actually been like, oh, I get to putt, because I get to watch the ball roll and break and turn and go down and fast and slow. And it makes it, it makes all the difference.
You it does. I mean? Like, that's great that you'd say that, because sometimes, you know, it's amazing to think that, you know, that you've ever thought any other way, you know, and sometimes I forget, you know, that that's right. People don't putt for the enjoyment of it, except that's what drew us to the game, right? That's yeah. what it was what actually bowling, or, you know, seeing the ball, you know, roll and around curves and up and down slopes mm-hmm. and stuff like that. I mean, everything about golf, if you, to me, if you look at what it is that people attracts people to carnivals and to very simple games, and you see what it is, you see the things that you enjoy, mm-hmm. which is, you know, bowling the ball along the ground, making the ball hop and bounce. Being able to toss it into buckets or baskets and can, you know, from different distances, and then being able to launch. I mean, those are the three facets. And I think being connected. I would say that there's a fourth: rolling, bouncing, launching, and connecting with other people and with the natural world. I think those are our kind of basic fascinations with that are there in golf.
Yeah. Can you think of a time when you were most fascinated with the game?
Well, I would say that, you know, I think the height of fascination as a golfer would be what we would call flow experience, you know, where you're I was, it's an ecstatic experience, which in the literal interpretation of ecstatic means standing alongside. So it's kind of an out of body experience. And I had it years ago. I was playing in a championship match, and I was actually playing against an opponent who had beaten me very badly in the same championship match years before. And he taught me a bunch of lessons in the process, because I'd watched him, and I watched how tough he was mentally around the golf course, and so in this match, I put those lessons to use, and I said to myself, well, what will happen, you know, if I play badly today, and will that be a total waste of my time? And I logically reckoned that no, that would if I played badly, I'd still have to make something good out of it. And so so in any case, I played, was able to get to a point on the course where I was playing with complete comfort and freedom, very little voices in my head. And I actually, when I chipped a ball in for an eagle, that was really the deciding factor on the hole, and I remember that thinking, the first thing I felt was how his stomach dropped at the moment that thing went in the hole. I wasn't surprised it went in the hole. I knew, I had a feeling it was going to go in the hole, but there was a level of compassion at the same time for, you know, how he felt. I didn't take any particular joy out of the feeling that he had. I just felt it as if it was, you know. So it was an experience like of taking in everything that was around me.
Even your opponent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, I played golf in college and was never very good because I never got to that point of, like, if I shoot bad, will it have been a waste of time? My answer would have been yes.
Yes.
And then that you're afraid, like, if I shoot a bad round, my coach is going to know, my teammates are going to know, it's going to go on the website. All those thoughts are in there on, like, the fairway of the first hole. So that, like, takes away any chance you have of actually playing good that day if you're worried about all of those things.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, isn't it? Because I think we always walk with those. If those thoughts were ever with us, they're always with us. And I think you simply learn to lighten up about them. You know, you don't take them so seriously. I used to think all those thoughts were God talking to me about, you know, the truth about life. And it was only when I reached middle age that I realized he was just a little scared man behind a curtain. And so I started to actually, I guess the Buddhists would say, be more compassionate even with those voices. And so I walk with them, and I'm always mindful of well, just like you're saying, what will people think of me if I play poorly? But, you know, I think that's how you learn to walk the tightrope. You know, you don't disavow any of those things. You just make friends with them.
Yeah. You make friends with those voices.
Yeah, those negative little.
That sounds easier said than done. I don't know. What do you think you can do that, Ty?
I'm not sure about that. No, I've got the negative voices. My strategy is more to tune them out, ignore them, or address them cognitively and just say, you know, it doesn't matter if I hit this OB or not. I'm just going to do the best I can and pick it up and play it from there.
Amen.
You got to give those voices a hug, though.
Yeah.
It's not enough to ignore them. My probably biggest moment of golf fascination was this summer. We went to Scotland on a golf trip, and the first round was at the West Links at North Berwick, which is right on, like, the sea. And you, like, get out of the car, you, like, park the car on this one-way road, and you get out, and the land is almost, like, elevated above the road, and it's right on the water, and it's the most beautiful thing ever. And my caddy's name was Andy, and it's like a spiritual moment. And go to the first hole. I was, like, so amazed, you know, so, like, amazed with the surroundings and, like, everything that was happening, and just happy to be there, that I just didn't care about anything at all, you know, like, swing wise. I wasn't, like, worried about where my elbow was. I wasn't worried about tempo. I was just, like, happy to be there. The first hole, like, goes, it's like a dog leg up the hill, and it looks really far, and he's, like, just hit an 8-iron. And I was like, okay. So I hit an 8-iron. Then he's like, it's another 8-iron up the hill, hit an 8-iron. I was like 40 feet from the hole. It was like down a huge ridge. And he's like, aim at this point. And I did. And the ball rolled right in the cup for birdie on the first hole. And I have, like, two guys from England that was with me. And I'm like, I think I'm done with golf in Scotland. Like, I'm just going to go home. That was the first hole. And it just got, I kept getting better. The course has an 800-year-old stone wall that goes right through the center of it. It, like, cuts across the fourth hole, so you have to kind of you can't hit driver because you'll get too close to the wall, our caddy was saying. And so as we're waiting to hit on hole four, all of a sudden we see this man from the group in front of us with a club in his hand just sprinting back towards the tee. We're like, what? Like, what could be going on? And our caddy's like, oh, he must have hit the wall with his second shot, and it, like, ricocheted back 150 yards that he had to go run back and hit it. And it's just like, these are the I don't know, this is what it's all about, is, like, things like that and the weird things. And I, like, the wind was with me on the way out, so I was, like, 2 under par, but then had to make the turn, and all the holes were back into the wind, and I somehow birdied the last hole to shoot even par. And it'll never get better than that.
Oh,
so
my
I don't
gosh.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But it was just none of it was about, I didn't worry about my score for 1 second until the end. I didn't even know what my score was until, like, that last hole. The guys in my group were like, you must have done this. I'm like, I don't know. I got to add it up. And it, like,
wow.
You know, so many other times, every other time, it's like, yeah, I'm 2 over par. You know certain days, but.
Well, that's what, you know, interesting you should describe it like that, because I was just looking this morning at Mihalya Csikszentmihalyi's study called The Flow, which was is a published book. I think it's just a fabulous thing. And he was talking about the fact that that we really only have so much attention space in our brain. And when we're in an optimal or flow experience, we're so absorbed by the exercise, that there is no room in our thinking for even the self or even monitoring our bodies. And so that's what gives us that sensation of being out of body, is that we're just so totally engrossed. Now, I can hardly imagine playing a round of golf and not knowing what my score was.
Yeah.
You know, the scorekeeper for me is always talking.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. That was the only time. That's totally involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
Like the quote, going back to the quote, says golf is a place to practice fascination. What do you think it means to practice fascination? Fascination's like something you see, like a beautiful sunset, and you're fascinated by that, but it's like you can actually practice this.
I don't yes.
know, you know what I mean?
Well, I think that the experience I've had with that is that there's usually, if you look at anything, and sometimes just very familiar objects, and you would relate to this from your meditation, because perhaps, you know, you meditate on objects. And But I learned a technique of looking at something and observing it for its physical location, its outlines, its borders, its surface, its density and weight, and things, and just follow your interest into it, and use your imagination to be there, to be that thing, and how you can use that, or the result of using it, is that it's a great way to quiet the voice part of your mind, because once you get into your imagination and you're simply experiencing things that way, there's no voice. There's no, am I doing this right or wrong? There's just being there. And I think that I've just found it very, very, very useful thing to do, because you have so many portals into it. If you're interested in how heavy the oak tree is, and what would it be to be that heavy and rooted in the ground? If it's the bark, the surface, if it's the branches and the complexity and the reaching to the sky, whatever it is that interests you about it, you just follow it.
And does the pace of the game facilitate that, your ability to slow down, take a deep breath, think about it?
Definitely. Definitely it does. Yeah, absolutely. And, to look at, I think to contemplate, the moods that you go through, one of the things that Csikszentmihalyi reveals is that the normal state of consciousness, unless it's ordered by some purposeful activity, the normal state of our thoughts and minds is chaos. Hmm. Thoughts just randomly bouncing around, that usually we land on the most painful or worrisome thoughts. And so it's not surprising that you should, unless you're deliberate about, creating your experience, that your experience would, by default, tend to go negative, especially if you're not having an experience that is lifting your self.
Yeah. It's so hard to be so intentional about that.
Yes.
Like last week, we had practice and we were playing at Harborside, and I just got done preparing for this podcast. So I'm thinking, like, oh, I'm going to be fascinated with the game today. Started out well. I had 7 pars in a row, but then on hole 8, it was a long hole and I hit it. I had 20 feet, but it was like a downhill right to left putt, and for some reason that putt just became like, it stopped being about fascination, it felt like work, and I just like didn't want to, I was like really again, like something like this, and I hit it like 5 feet past, missed the putt, and then I doubled the next hole and shot 44 on the back, and so I it was gone just like that. And so you would say it's just about being more intentional, like at every single moment.
Well, and you have to practice that too, don't you? Because it's like, and I'm sure Ty would, attest to this. It's in practicing meditation, you're always bringing your mind back, aren't you?
Because
it tends to just go. And so I think very often, it's a question of how far you can walk, before you blink, and then once you blink or fall off the path, then how quickly can you right your ship and get back on it? I think that that's how I look at that. I talk about, remember reading about jugglers and how jugglers observe and measure their performances, how many tosses before they drop. And the interesting thing, you know, about that is that it's not a continuous smooth upward curve. It very often looks like, okay, we'll throw these shoe boxes up in the air, and it goes 2, 1, 2, 2, 3, 1, 5, 3, 2, 7. You know, and but it continues to go up and down like water filling up a lock. You know, it the level's going up, but the experience in the moment, if you're riding on the water, is still up and down. And I think that that's what that's one of the thing, the images that that's helped me, because in any practice session, when I was a young man, I used to look at practice as the proof of your perfecting something. So if I'd hit a good shot, that wouldn't mean anything to me unless I could follow it up with another good shot on the range. And once I realized that that was actually working to diminish me, because how could I improve if I just hit a ball on the screws? Why would I want to hit another one? I just did it. So, but those kinds of practices, you know, you start to notice whether they're working for you or not working for you. Yeah. And I started to notice that my attitude towards practice wasn't working towards me because what it was producing was unhappiness and a disempowering feeling, really. Oh, I didn't really own the swing. I only rented it, and all those cliches about it. And then I started to realize that it was just practice was an exercise. And if you did it in an intelligent way, you became stronger. You became more coordinated. It didn't guarantee that you weren't going to fall in and out of sync. But what it did do was make you way more familiar with how to rebuild yourself. And so you could go back to square one, which you always have to do, and rebuild yourself, you know, all the time. I met a guy years ago, Erie Ball, was a legendary club professional in our area, a Scotsman. And he was warming up one day. I didn't know who he was, but I felt sorry for him. He was at the other end of the range, and he was hitting all kinds of terrible slices and hooks and awful-looking shots. And when my host took me down and introduced me to him and asked how was he doing with his practice, he says, "Oh, marvelous." And I, having observed him, I couldn't imagine what he meant. And he said, "I'm finding my swing today." And that was a curious statement, finding your swing. What do you mean? He said, well, for instance, he said a straight ball is somewhere between a slice and a hook. So I come out here and I hit these slices and the hooks, and I hit them high and I hit them low. And I know I'm going to have to use them out on the golf course. You know, invariably I'll find myself in a predicament where I can use a slice or a hook, so I will have practiced it. And that wasn't the way I warmed up or practiced at all. I was trying to hit my best shot and to make my best swing and to be perfect on every swing in order to feel that I own things. And I realized that this guy was way, way ahead of me in his thinking, that his practice was empowering him, you know, through his own experience. It wasn't, bad shots were not damaging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ben Hogan said, you know, if you ever hit a straight shot, it was an accident.
You know? I forgot that.
The only time I know I'm going to play a bad round of golf is when I have an awesome range session right before, where like everything goes well. I just know it's not going to go as well. Like, you can hit like just like 20 drivers perfectly straight, then you get to the first tee, and there's a little bit like, uh-oh, like I actually got to do it again now, and then you're done. At that point,
you're done.
Ty, has your like meditation, like, has that, what about that has helped you like find fascination with golf?
Being present in the moment and just you know, focusing on the breath when you get nervous. When I tee it up with you guys, you're so good, I'm nervous, but focusing on the breath, being present in the moment, looking at the clouds and sun and trees and grass, being really appreciative for all the people behind the scenes who work on the golf course to make it look beautiful. All those little things. And like I said, I don't go out there anymore to break records or set personal bests. It's great when I do, but I go out there to enjoy myself and exercise and be in the sun and nature.
Yeah, that's great. Pete, would you give any... Well, when it comes to your... like, you've been teaching golf for a long time. From golf instruction that I've experienced, it's so much of it's about the technical aspect of it. Is there anything about, you know, all this stuff we've been talking about that should be emphasized more, or that you've found ways to help people find fascination as you're teaching them?
Well, I think that I would say the first thing that comes to my mind as far as is the ability to open yourself up to fascination is forgiveness or compassion. I know that sounds kind of strange to our Western ears. It's not very masculine sounding, but you have to be able to be present in the moment. You can't be suffering self-recrimination, you know, for your errors. You know, you have to be okay with them, because if you're going to be thrown off by every failed attempt you make and have an emotional response that requires you to some recovery time, you're wasting time. And so I think that once you realize that it is or it isn't working for you, and that being whatever perspective you have, if it's not working for you, you need to change it. And when people come to me and want to change something, they can't change it without that. Because along the way, unless we've just gotten lucky, the lessons that I really hate are, you know, sometimes just in terms of I got to look out for them, is one of the first lessons that I will, let's say, have with a student. And I give them a thought, and instantly they get better. And sometimes that's because that single thought is replacing a whole bunch of thoughts that they were using before, and so now that focus all by itself makes them better. And now they mistake what just happened. You know, they don't really realize what happens. They think they just got a magic amulet, yeah, you know, that's going to work for them all the time. Well, that's not what's occurring. Yeah. You know, if I don't help them to see that the way they view their experiences is an integral part of the learning process in many cases, I don't feel like we've had a successful lesson.
Yeah.
And it's day-to-day learning process. I mean, every day is different, even for the professionals. It was a Webb Simpson shot 63 on Saturday and 76 on Sunday. I mean, how does it take a professional 13 more strokes to get around the same golf course than the very next day?
Honestly, that couldn't be a better example than that.
Yeah.
That's been, you know, always true, that there is this 15-stroke range that we're capable of. And we tend to think, as a for instance, that consistency is just staying on that number or score or quality of ball striking all the time. And in fact, it's a, you know, we're surfing, you know, and learning to surf is actually learning to play golf.
Yeah. I agree that the mindset's such an important part of it, because our minds default when something's not working. We do try to fix it, but we try to fix it by, like, I need to keep my left arm straighter, or I need to, you know, move my knee in this way. Keep my head down, right? It's all these, like, Golf Digest, you know, quick, like, this is how you get better, fix this. And, like, it's the same thing when, you know, when you're teaching these kids out there and they hit a bad shot. Like, well, what did I do on that one? And I was like, well, actually, like, you just need to have not gotten so mad at yourself about the previous shot. Like, it's not about anything about your technique. It's that you're standing over this thing, like, terrified you're going to hit it in the water, or you're so angry about your last shot that you have no idea what you're doing anymore. It's like you have to get over that before you can do anything else. And I feel like that's not, I mean, that article isn't in Golf Digest every week.
Yes. You know, the Fred Shoemaker, who's a great teacher out on the West Coast, wrote a book and did a seminar series, he's probably still doing it, called Extraordinary Golf. And he in the book, he characterized, he said golfers are usually share three traits when they arrive at the first tee. He said the first is that the only thing they're committed to really is looking good, or the flip side of that is avoiding embarrassment. Secondly, that their thoughts are highly judgmental. Everything is about good and bad. And the third thing is they're two bad shots away from being upset.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're in that profile, whether you're on the course or on the lesson tee, it's very difficult to make any kind of forward movement, because you'll keep sabotaging yourself, because you'll make that one step forward, which is like the juggler, you know, setting a new personal high, yeah. But then you'll get too upset over the fact that your performance drops back down the very next yeah. instant. Because you don't really, and I think this is where it lies, is people don't really get, they don't really understand the process that they're in. And there's very very little about our modern life that clues anybody into that, because all of our marketing is about, you know, instant.
Lose weight now.
Yeah. Lose weight, exactly,
like,
right.
This is the answer. Here's, you know, quick fix.
If you want to find the learning or the words from it, I was sitting yesterday morning and I put on the television, I put the music channel on. So I'm listening to soundscapes. And of course, they're playing on the screen all these words of wisdom from the Dalai Lama, from, you know, Buddha, from Abraham Lincoln, from Ben Frank, and all of them are saying the same thing. Hey, struggle is a part of growth.
Yeah.
You know, that to be stretched and to be challenged is what complete engagement and flow experience, optimal experience is all about. So yeah. Seek it out. Don't avoid it. Unfortunately, from the music channel to out there in the world, it's hard to find that kind of coaching and training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's this old, you know, the show The Twilight Zone. There's an episode where there's this guy named Rocky Valentine, and he's like, he robs banks and stuff, but as he's like in the middle of a bank robbery, he gets shot and he dies, and he goes up, you know, up to the clouds or whatever, and someone's there. He's like, I'm Pip, and he like welcomes him in, like, I'll be here to show you around, like, what do you want to do? And Rocky like pulls out his gun, he's like, give me all your money. And Pip's like, okay, here's your money. And Rocky's a little confused, like, do you want any more money? And Rocky, you know, didn't know what to say. Pip takes him to his house, and he's like, what do you want to do next? Rocky's like, I want to gamble. And he goes and gambles, and when he gambles, he gets everything. He wins every single role. He gets all the women, like, flock to him, and he gets every single woman he wants. And he does this for a little while, and then after, like, a month or so, he goes to Pip, and he's like, I don't belong here. I don't belong in heaven. Like, I was such a bad person. And Pip goes, like, you know, Twilight Zone fashion, like, you're not in heaven, you're in hell. That, like, he was able to get every, hell was getting everything you want. And so what you just said made me think of that story of, like, the struggle is a part of it. And we feel like our goal is to hit every single shot perfect. But, like, if we could hit every single shot perfect, that we would just stop playing golf. There would be no reason whatsoever to keep playing this game, because, like, you would do the same thing every single time, and it would not be interesting, and no one would write books or be fascinated by it, because it's just, that's how it is.
That's how it is. No, and that's how it really is, how it is. But, you know, there are many people who will come in here and insist to you that that's not true, despite knowing that, but for they're quite convinced that in their own personal experience, the consistency of every shot being the same is just what they want and expect, and it's tragic, actually.
I mean, it's such an interesting balance, too, though, because you do want to get better and hit good shots, but also, like, you have to know and embrace that the struggle is part of the experience.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, I guess that's where you find and practice fascination. If you can practice fascination in the midst of the struggle, you're doing something right, I think.
Yeah. Oh, there's no, you know, absolutely right. Couldn't agree more. I mean, it is. It's actually part of the definition of it. Yeah. You know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think this is a good place to wrap up our very first episode. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Pete,
for being
My
here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Clean contact.
I'd hit it again, because that shot was a defining moment. And when a defining moment comes along, you define the moment, or the moment defines you.
Come back. Here it comes. Come back.